listening to another Netcast production brought to you by the Fancy Pants Gangsters at fancypantsgangsters.com. Because those who can, do. Those who cannot, do it on the internet.
Hey, this is Sammy from the Fourth Rights.
Hey, we're Chester Bay.
We're John Wayne and the Pain.
Hi, this is your boss, smooth gal, Maddie Pistlitz.
Hi, we're the Drop Steppers.
Yo, this is King Django, and you're listening to the Flyover Ska Show.
Flyover Ska Show.
Flyover Ska Show.
Flyover Ska Show.
Flyover Ska Show. And Fancy Pants Gangsters.
Fancy Pants Gangsters.
Fancy Pants Gangsters.
FancyPantsGangsters.com. Yo, what's up with the Fancy Pants?
Live and direct with Badaloo and the Justice. Stand firm and ever ready, people. Conscious when the day come and the iniquity work. I won't push you too far. You have to trot them down. Spread the word. Zulu says something. Tell me when you're ready.
When you're ready.
When you're ready. Tell me when you're ready. They chant them down. Zulu. Them down.
Zulu.
Somebody try to take the dance. Hello,
hola, everybody, and welcome to the Flyover Ska Show, brought to you by the Fancy Pants Gangsters Podcast Network at fancypantsgangsters.com and MN Ska, Minnesota's ska community at mnska.com. I'm your host, Courtney Close, and we got to tell you about our friends, you know it, over at Copycats Media. These guys over at Copycats, they're the best. I mean, they're a great resource for musicians and bands who are out there that really want to release an album. They've got CD and DVD manufacturing, design services, in-house printing and packaging. You've heard me talk about them over and over, week in and week out. And guess what? They still do have that special for you Flyover Ska listeners. You can still get 100 11 by 17 full-color posters for free if you mention the Flyover Ska Show. So go over and check them out at copycatsmedia.com. We've got quite the show for you this week because we have on the blower from Chicago, Anthony from the reggae dub band The Drastics. Anthony, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, Courtney. How you doing?
So, Anthony, you're down in Chicago. Where are you calling to us from?
Ukrainian Village neighborhood in Chicago, Illinois. I'm just in the studio right now. I was working on some tracks, actually, before we started talking.
Oh, anything you care to share with the listeners? What are you working on?
Yeah, we're just tracking some holiday tunes right now, kind of as just a bit of fun, partially because also there's a radio station in Chicago that asks us to do that. So I'm working on a pretty heavy dubbed out version of Frosty the Snowman right now. So.
I bet that's it sounds pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, so far so good. I'm going to try to get these posted on our website and maybe even do a free download in the next like day or two. So,
I've always kind of, you know, thought of the sort of like you and the Drastics and all of this sort of dubbing and live dubbing and stuff. You guys are kind of like mad scientists in the lab, are you not?
Sonically speaking, yeah, for sure.
You guys have put out a few singles over the past year, and then more notoriously, you guys put out your MJ A Rocker compilation of Michael Jackson dub tunes. Those sound just awesome, by the way.
Hey, thanks.
Where exactly did you get the idea to do that project?
That was an idea worked out between me and Chuck Wren of Jump Up Records. He actually came to me with it and was basically like, hey, you should do this. Because he had been either caring or even just knew about, but there was a Motown one very similar to that. That was straight bootleg style. I think it was Motown Flies Jamaica, or maybe that's the official released one. I don't remember. But if somebody in Germany took Motown acapellas and put them over Roots tracks, and he was like, hey, you should do this with Michael Jackson because of his passing, you know?
Yeah, right.
And it blew up. I still get people telling me how much they, you know, they bump it in the morning, they bump it on their way to work, whatever. So it's cool, you know?
Yeah, it was a very interesting project. And, you know, I help run the mnska.com website. And mm-hmm. I have to say, like, consistently, when I posted that last year, it's still one of the top hits on a lot of the web traffic goes to that post in particular. So it's like, obviously, people are still checking it out and still kind of crazy about it.
Yeah, I think I think it's just been moving like geographically, because the latest batch of posts and emails I've gotten and things from people are all from Central and South America now. They're all in Spanish, so I don't read Spanish, so I don't understand it. But like somebody even, and I'm pretty sure they're Spanish speaking, put up videos of like the original Rock With You video, but with our version just dubbed over it. I don't know if you know, it's like Michael Jackson's in like a silver spacesuit dancing in front of gems and things like that. It's a pretty sweet video. But yeah, no, I mean, it was a really cool project. And as like a learning process, it was really cool. You know, you break those tunes down and there's a lot of stuff happening. Quincy Jones is a pretty amazing producer. So it's almost like a good good workout slash lesson as well. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting to hear of these sort of projects where you've got well-known either hip-hop or, in this case, was Motown, over that reggae dub beat and those rhythms. And so I guess what makes a good dubbable track?
Well, you know, for the MJ stuff, I mean, a couple of those tunes are, I would classify closer to like skinhead reggae or something. But there's something cool about dub that there's a lot of space. So you can kind of fill in the blanks and get away with kind of mashing up stuff easier, if that makes sense.
Sure. And this is a very interesting, I mean, I find this, that, you know, dubbing and all that sort of stuff very interesting, because I know virtually nothing about the process. I don't know how, like, what work goes into. To me, it just seems like black magic, but
yeah.
Like, to sort of make a dub mix of some of my favorite tunes. So you want to kind of walk me through how exactly do you approach some of these dub projects?
Well, with each tune that I do, you know, maybe not even project, I just try to mess up the sound as much as I can while still maintaining the beat. So it's not something I've ever really tried to put into words. Like last night I was working on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, right? And it's basically always a push to create a sound that, at least for me personally, a sound that I haven't used yet. So, you know, what you were saying earlier about it's kind of like chemistry. It's kind of like science, where you have these elements and these building blocks, and you put them together in different orders and you see what you get. You know, and that can be as literal as or as physical as actual effects units, like, you know, taking a delay and putting it into another delay, but that's set on reverse, and then putting that delay into a filter pedal, and putting that filter pedal into a reverb unit, and then, you know, a certain type of reverb unit, versus, you know, those building blocks being sonic, like you have the bass and you have the guitar and you have the drums, and how are you going to put those in an order that creates tension and release and builds essentially to an apex and a release.
Right. Well, and to me, it sounds like you, in order to do some of these things, it sounds like you got all sorts of crazy equipment. I mean, how much money have you spent over the years on equipment to create these effects?
Oh, I don't know.
It must have been a ton, right? I mean, you must be literally surrounded with this. This is in my, of course, my imagination.
Yeah,
but you must have all sorts of like these giant like hardware just surrounded by electronic.
Man, I wish. No, I mean, I have a fair amount of stuff, and it's more being versatile with it and getting the most out of it. You know, I mean, yeah, I collect vintage effects units, but you know, I don't have top of the line anything. I get all my stuff on eBay for cheap.
Right.
You know, I have like a couple units that are definitely the standbys, and they get used on every track. And then, you know, there's like a lot of borrowing I do as well. You know, I know a lot of guitar players that have, you know, their whole pedal boards, mm-hmm. and I'll just ask them like, hey, can I borrow that for a week? Like, you know, that one, that like that Moog ring mod that he's got, like, hey, I heard those supposed to be really good. Can I check that out? And then it ends up on a track or whatever, you know? So, mm-hmm. you know, it's part of being in a musical community that you know, you learn from other people what kind of sounds you can create, and then you apply it to your own project.
Right. Okay. Why don't we take a little bit of a step back? And I know that you've been involved with all sorts of different musical projects over the years, but let's go back to the beginning with you, Anthony. Like, how did you kind of get started kind of in the music business and in, you know, and playing in bands? Like, where did it all begin for you?
Well, you know, in high school, had the ska band. When I was a freshman in high school, which would be in 94, a bunch of seniors in band that I was also, you know, like in the orchestra and symphonic wind ensemble, things like that. A bunch of the seniors had a band, and you know, they would do shows, but more than that, they would just go to a lot of shows. So, you know, get really into the ska scene, you know.
Now, is this all down in Chicago then?
Yeah. Yeah, north side. And then got into, like, the punk scene off of that. But, you know, I was always more into jazz and the more, like, improvisational music, if you want to call it, whatever you want to call it. So, you know, from there, did the ska thing in high school, went to college, and then started playing with what would become the Zooks, who put out a couple albums in the late 90s, early 2000s. You know, that group was more ska rock steady. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, I mean, at least musically, the bands I've played with, it's like almost like a direct line, even chronologically speaking, in Jamaican music terms, from the ska days to the reggae days, where it's like, I started playing ska, got into rocksteady, started playing rocksteady, got into reggae, started playing reggae, so I got into dub, and then started playing dub. So,
no two-tone in there?
the first ska band I was in, I'm sure we did some things that touched on two-tone for sure, and, you know, some third wave. You know, we weren't really traditional by any means, because we were young and excited and just wanted to play, so it's hard to keep a bunch of 15-year-olds from not, like, kind of punking out. They're
yeah.
full of angst and piss and vinegar, as they would say.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what was your instrument of choice, I guess?
My instrument of choice has always been the sax, but I always get put on the drums because there's never drummers.
Right.
So, and don't get me wrong, I love playing the drums. It's great, but, you know, for a long time, sax is really like what I concentrated on. And I had the jazz trio in Chicago, and we gigged and did the restaurants and private parties, things like that. But you also get burnt out on that really quickly too, playing the same, you know, cause I mean, I was writing music, but you can't go to a black tie affair at the, you know, university club downtown Chicago and like start dropping your like, you know, jazz tunes that like have free sections and things like people just want to hear Fly Me to the Moon and
Autumn Leaves.
And they're beautiful tunes, but that can get stale.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's dark. Nice. It's nice to hear the, like, it's funny who I talk to, because I also play sax. So it's like, it's interesting to hear the different people who are fellow saxmen.
Yeah. Well, Barry's my horn, which is a little bit of a niche because there's not a whole lot of those. I played Barry in the Drastics for the first year and a half or two until our first drummer left. And then that's when I had to take over. And I was geeked about that because it was like, finally, I get to play sax in a reggae band that, mm-hmm. like, I'm writing most of the tunes for. I know, you know, like, I get to solo over this, like, these, like, kind of cool different grooves with these, you know, great musicians.
How did it lead up to the Drastics? How did the Drastics start to form?
Well, the Zooks basically relocated to Chicago after I got done with school, and we all felt like we had grown out of Peoria / I went to school in Peoria, Illinois.
Okay.
Which, if nobody knows, it's kind of dead center, and there's not a whole lot happening there. So we, you know, we just thought, yeah, Chicago. Well. You know, I mean, I was going to move home. Everybody else saw it as an opportunity. But shortly after that, the band started to kind of fall apart. People started moving in different directions, things like that. And I've been working on a bunch of new music, mostly instrumental and like mostly experimental. I wouldn't exactly say dub, but just weird reggae tunes with like a lot of influence from like 60s avant-garde jazz, like seems like Miles and stuff from the 60s and Eric Dolphy and guys like that that I was really digging and still do dig. But the group just started off of a Reader ad, which is like the Reader is like the free arts rag in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And our bass player, Chris, who's still playing in the Drastics, responded to an ad looking to start a dub reggae project. He was living with a drummer and a keyboardist. I responded and brought Tom, the tenor player in the Drastics, and some of the Zvooks. And the guy that put the ad out was this guy, Josh, a guitar player. And so in two phone calls, we had a 7-piece band of everybody ready to go and try something different. So,
What year around the time was the full lineup or the full first lineup created?
Would that be probably late 2004? So, I mean, yeah, like December 2004 would probably been like our first rehearsal. I remember it was really cold. So like the full band really started kicking in, like, I want to say 2005. Cause that's when our first album dropped. I remember like playing a couple of shows and immediately Chuck from Jump Up being interested and being like coming up to me and saying like, cool, so you're going to let me put out your album, right? Like, yeah, sure. I wasn't even thinking that far ahead yet. You know, this project had just gotten off the ground. So it was cool. And,
Is Chicago a good, I mean, a good place for that sort of niche of music that you guys put out, that sort of reggae dub stuff?
I mean, I think it is. Chicago is one of these cities that I have a lot of musician friends that get real frustrated and with Chicago and move out and move to New York or LA and things like that. But I gotta say, I really feel there's only a few other cities in the U.S., maybe overseas, there's more, but that are Chicago size that you can really do your creative / non-commercial thing and still make your rent working 20 hours a week at a part-time job. You know, like, you know, there is a very strong free jazz scene in Chicago and like avant-garde, you know, scene. Two of like the more like, you know, indie clubs have regular jazz nights with real heavy guys. Ken Vandermark hosts one, and I don't know who hosts the other one. Actually, off the top of my head. But you know, these guys are really serious guys, and people come out, check it out. You know, musicians are into it. Non-musicians are into it. So to answer your question, do I think we're in a good city? Yes. Does reggae carry enough of like a reggae is such a loaded word that it still doesn't get played. Yes. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword. Like I think people here would be open-minded enough and into it, but like you're never going to see a reggae band booked at either of these two clubs because reggae is a bad word, you know?
That's interesting. The concept that it's a bad word. I mean, I feel like, you know, reggae and ska music it's always been, you know, underground here in the U.S. and I think it probably will always remain underground. But what necessarily do you think makes it a sort of a bad label?
Well, I think the bottom line is that most people's conception of reggae is incorrect. So
I'd agree with that.
Right. So you're fighting that. And I mean, you know, it's first off is that, you know, a bunch of white dudes on stage playing reggae. Well, it's obviously going to be some hippie crap, right? Or if they don't even bother, you know, if they don't even see the band, it's like, oh, it's a reggae band. You know, it's probably Bob Marley covers or, you know, synth horns and, you know, or even worse, people think, you know, equate reggae with dancehall now, or, you know, not that there's anything wrong with dancehall, but, you know, it's different, exactly. And, you know, I don't think the indie rocker, like, hipster scene is, like, well-versed enough in Jamaican musical history to understand the differences and the nuances. So, that's like, I guess that's, I mean, that's what I mean is that by it's a bad word is, it's easy to get shows. It's hard to get shows in the places that, are quote unquote respected slash have like a reputation.
Right. And I think that's probably the case, across the country in no matter what your major metropolitan area. I don't know. I think it's very interesting. I've been reading, recently, I've been reading this book by Heather Augustin, this Ska and Oral History, and so I mean it's all like these firsthand accounts from Derek Morgan and the Skatalites, and like so you hear from like what these people thought at the time, what the music it was that they were creating or that they were founding or that they're like, well, we've got these different styles of music, but they were just, they're just styles of music, and now it just all kind of gets lumped together. And yeah, I think you're right. It's like if people go, oh, it's a reggae band, they're thinking it's either, We Be Jammin' or like some stoners up there playing Sublime or something.
Exactly. For 8 minutes or something. Yeah. Like, you could never have a reggae band write original music and be creative at the same time and be innovative, I think, is the other thing too, right? I mean obviously reggae is old, is an old style of music, but it's the taking the taking that, trying to take it to another level, so to speak.
Well, exactly, and that's what's going to set you apart, especially in this kind of modern music scene we find ourselves in. It's if you don't have something that sets you apart, you'll be forever compared to whatever was popular that came before. And so in this case, like Bob Marley, but it's clear, Anthony, that you have a good grasp on like Jamaican music. What kind of led you to be interested in the first place with Jamaican music?
I mean, as I said before, when I was in high school, I was a freshman and a bunch of junior seniors had this ska band, and I don't even know. I mean, I couldn't imagine that I was really so much into the music as I was just into being like the juniors and seniors, like a lot like a lot of freshmen are, and like a lot of just young people, will look up to their elders. So, that was the introduction. But then when, I remember the first ska CD I ever bought was the Skatalites, Skavuvi, which is, I couldn't imagine one of their better known albums. I think it came out in the either late 80s or early 90s. Mm-hmm. This traditional is, of course, all instrumental. But I remember getting it, I remember going to like, dating myself here a bit, but I remember like going to like the Coconuts or the Sam Goody or whatever the, when they actually had like CD stores.
Right.
And, digging through the during the CDs, not knowing any ska bands, not knowing anything about anything, and just seeing the word ska on the CD and was like, cool, I guess I'll buy this then. And took it home, and it was like this perfect, as I mentioned before, I was really into jazz, and this is like this perfect combination of horn driven instrumentals, but like with a hard beat that had an exoticness to it that just really appealed to me. And so, it wasn't the jazz I was listening to, which was great and expressive. This was a bit expressive, but also a bit in your face and a bit meant, not a bit, a lot meant for you to get up and move your feet and not just sit and listen introspectively. And so I just had all those great elements that, I really dig.
It's interesting that was how you went through, you went from, hey, I like ska because this, because the upperclassmen are now treating me with respect and I'm hanging out with them. Right. To, kind of doing your own research, because I feel like, back in the 80s and 90s, you didn't have the internet, and so it's like you had to do your own legwork if you wanted to find out about something, right?
I mean, okay. Oh yeah, for sure, yeah. So yeah, you couldn't just. I mean, well, maybe you can get on AOL for your 20 hours a month or however they used to run that scam,
right.
But
I guess they'll get some of those free CDs.
Yeah, sure, we all do. But yeah, I mean, to be fair also, though, I grew up in a pretty musical household. My dad is an avid record collector, all kinds of music. So I grew up listening to all kinds of music. And so, he would play a lot of Latin and soul. You know, he played some stuff that I don't think is good, but you know, he would play stuff that I'd really get down on even as a kid. So, you know, it was kind of in my nature to be curious about music anyways.
It's definitely interesting. My dad didn't have anything but Moody Blues and Meatloaf, right. I think. You know, it's like we were kind of a little bit like, as far as like awesome music, we didn't really have a whole lot. I mean, we had to come across it ourselves in our house, but
right.
We're roughly the same age. I feel like a lot of people came through this progression of, oh, I get into ska punk, and then I start listening, and it's like, oh, okay, there's this, you know, older stuff, there's like two-tone stuff, I can get into that, and it's like, oh, okay, there's some of this, you know, traditional ska, there's this, you know, early reggae stuff, and, you know, that's more or less how what my trajectory looked like. So it's interesting that after finding it in high school, you went straight to the source and got a Scatolites and a Scatolites album.
But I mean, to be fair, that isn't all that I listen. You know, I was into the ska punk thing for sure, because I mean that's what was around. That was the scene. You know, that's what, you know, we would go to the Fireside Bowl, and we would go to off the alley all the way down on the south tip of the city, and you know, there weren't any traditional bands back then. It was all, like you said, yeah, third wave, a lot of punk, some two-tone, but not really. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, you would get, like, a traditional band, but it would be just, you know, a bunch of high school kids that could barely play their horns. And, you know, at that point, it's like you'd almost rather just have the high energy getting slapped in the face, because at least the kids hitting the drums and the bass and the guitar are, like, loud instead of, like, you know, bunch of weak ass sounding horns. So
right. It's tough too when you see groups like that, because you're like, oh, your heart is in the right place, and I admire the effort, but the execution is a little off.
for sure. Yeah, I would never, you know, I would never ever say a discouraging word to kids trying to do that. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. So
yeah, absolutely. Once the Drastics got off the ground and started rubbing elbows with Chuck Wren, he was very interested in the group. Where did the band go from there during that winter of 2004, 2005?
We did the first album in 2005. After that, we kind of, I don't remember when we did the show, but we did a show with Ring Ding and Django on it. You know, at that time, we were pretty much a rhythm section that featured the horns. And, you know, we were always kind of on the lookout for vocalists. I mean, there's some guest vocalists on our first album. You know, we must have done the show with them before the album came out. So maybe we did the show with them in early 2004. Mm-hmm. And because I remember, you know, walking up to Ring Ding and, you know, asking him like, hey, you know, we kind of do this dance hall thing. It'd be cool if you wanted to get up. And he was like, oh, okay, I'll check you guys out and you know, see if you're any, you know, I'll check it out, and if I'm feeling it, I'll get up. And then I went up to Django, and I was like, hey, man, we're doing this dance hall thing, and Ring Ding said he's going to check it out, you know, if you want to get up. And I'll never forget, he just looks at me and goes, you any good? And I was like, yeah, we're okay, man, just check it out. If you're feeling it and you want to get up, you're more than welcome to. So sure enough, he got up with Ring Ding, and they killed it, and then we ended up getting both of them on the album. You know, and then we ended up doing tours with both Ring Ding and Django, which were a blast and a lot of learning experience.
Did you know where the band was going from there? Like, did you have like a goal in mind of like, this is the type of band we want to be?
Yeah, well, I think in the early days it was definitely, we really wanted to make a go at it as an instrumental band. Yeah, having vocalists was great and all, but we didn't want to rely on it. However, with more years and more experience and more shows under our belt, we started to realize, like, you definitely have, like, people come up to you and compliment the instrumental sets, but with a vocalist in front, you can see the reaction right then, and it's just easier to get people into it with a vocalist, because the vocalist is basically, I mean, their job is to stand on stage and tell people what to do, right?
Like, right.
You know, dance now and listen to me sing and all that kind of thing. So now it's kind of weird. Now I think with there seems to be like a whole instrumental movement, and it seems to be all coming out of Staten Island with the with the Daptone guys, with the Budos Band and Menahan Street Band and all these groups that like are only doing instrumental, and they kill it live, and people come out in droves to see them. So, you know, we're kind of reevaluating things now and thinking like, oh, okay, maybe people are getting into instrumentals again, you know, like, or giving them a chance for the first time. I don't know, but
sure. Do you got any theories as to why the change in respect for the live instrumental?
I think a lot of it has to do with, and I could be wrong. I could be speaking completely from my own. Well, we all speak from our own little worlds, but my own very sheltered idea in this sense is that all these reissues that are coming out on both vinyl and CD, you have all these Ethiopian reissues, African, Latin reissues, and a lot of them are instrumental. And there's a whole new audience that is being introduced to really killing instrumental music. And I mean, not that I don't want to say like we were killing it back in the day, but I don't think that we would have been given a chance since we were an instrumental band. And now it's like people hear these records and they're like, oh, so that you can do that without a singer. Like you can be a really killing dance band without a singer. And that just paved the way for these like, you know, modern groups that are, you know, revisioning this music, you know. And reggae, unfortunately, doesn't have a strong instrumental history much past the ska days.
Right.
So that's like another, I feel like this whole interview, I've just been like explaining how difficult my life is. And I don't want it to come across like that.
yeah, no, it's got to be cathartic in some ways. Just get it all out there.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to have myself a good cry once I say goodbye.
Yeah.
But no, you know, it's like, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's, there isn't a strong tradition. So it's also, you know, yet another component that people need to get used to / be open-minded to.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it is a bit of an obstacle, but then again, I think, you know, if you go back to what you said earlier about innovation, I think that things that haven't been done before, or not at least not regularly, I think there's room for that. And I think people that are music fans, true blue music fans, I think they also hold that same opinion. So to me, you know, just because there haven't been like a whole established catalog of instrumental reggae groups doesn't mean that there can't be instrumental reggae.
Oh yeah,
groups, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean there are the few, you know, gems from back in the day, like the Man from Waurika Hill, mm-hmm. and you know, I mean, there's obviously a strong instrumental tradition. It's just not, just wasn't translated to the reggae scene super well. I mean, I don't know. It's, I love working with vocalists and I love writing for horns. So, you know, we like the position that we're in. We're like, you know, we're a rhythm section. I don't want to say for hire, but you know, that is willing to work with a lot of different style of vocalists. But we can also hold our own without one. So,
sure. Who's been your favorite kind of person to work with, you know, either a vocalist or, you know, or a group? What, who's kind of been, you know, who are the top favorites, I guess?
Well, the vocalist that we record with the most, this guy, MC Zulu, he is really, I think, just perfect for us because he could do the dance hall chatty thing. Mm-hmm. He can sing harmonies. You know, he writes really great lyrics. He's super busy though, so it becomes difficult to get him to come out on the road a lot, you know, sometimes to a lot. And, which is great though. You know, he works with a lot of electro groups and the dubstep and the grime kind of scenes. And he's making a name for himself on that. So, it's really great to see him, getting his in a way. You know, other mainstay vocalist that we work with a lot is this cat Fata Dugu, West African cat. And he's great too. He comes to the stage with a ton of energy and sings in his native language. He can speak French. I don't think I've ever heard him sing in French though. He's got a totally different vibe than Zulu, who's kind of gruff, and then Fata is a little bit more amped and like kind of party, like really fast spitting lyrics and stuff like that. So, you know, we got to work with Kincaid Smith from Hepcat when he was living in Chicago for about 9-10 months. He played pretty much every show with us, I think.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, that was really cool. We weren't, I thought of this before, we didn't record anything at the time, and that was a missed opportunity, I guess. But no, and then in terms of, like, I guess bands that we played with that, you know, we really dig, like, you know, pretty much all your standard groups that are still doing it from the ska days, you know, Slackers and, you know, Django's group. We just did a show out with him in Brooklyn, and that was a lot of fun. But, you know, what's cool with the Drastics is that we do get to play with some bands that I think other reggae bands and ska bands, you know, wouldn't be asked to play with, you know, like we've backed Ralph Soul Jackson, this soul singer, pretty unknown until recently when a friend of ours, John Seba, rediscovered him and put him on a compilation of Birmingham recorded soul music. And John got a hold of him, and he's still kicking and decided to try to put out a new album, which I believe is in the works right now, that a bunch of the Drastics are on. And, you know, so we got to back him. You know, we've opened for Rebirth Brass Band. The people that are in the know do know that we're doing something different and are willing to take a chance on us and expose us to a different crowd. You know, not a reggae crowd or not a ska crowd, you know.
Right.
Which is really, you know, what we're trying to do. You know, no disrespect to the ska reggae crowd, but, you know, I just never feel like it really, like, hit a nerve. What we're doing is really hit a nerve with that scene.
Well, it's interesting, and I think as a musician first, I think you almost want to, you know, keep all the doors open as far as opportunities to play with different genres and, you know, tour or gig with different groups that are outside of your own genre. It gives you a little more exposure, you know, to other types of music scenes and crowds, but I think... would you agree? I mean, don't you think? When you want growth, when you want to grow as a musician or grow as a musical band, you want to put yourselves in, sort of in situations that are outside of the nice cozy bubble or comfort zone.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, they also need to be beneficial. You know.
Yeah.
Us going and playing a punk show in a VFW hall would probably be a waste of everybody's time. But, yeah, I mean, and I feel like we do that musically as individuals as well. You know, like me and Chris, the bass player, we're the rhythm section for the singer-songwriter at Adam Fitz in Chicago. And then, you know, I sit in with and our trombone player plays with regularly a soul group from Chicago, J.C. Brooks and the Uptown Sound. And then our bass player also plays with J.T. in the Clouds, which is a more folk kind of rock group. And, and the list goes on. I'm not going to keep plugging all of my friends' bands. But yeah, I mean, you know, that opens up possibilities because then it's like, you know, oh, you're exposed to a completely different crowd and, you know, maybe you're talking to somebody at the bar and then this comes up and that and this. So,
do you think that maybe we're working with all these different groups and different musical styles and stuff, maybe it scratches a couple of different itches? To me, it seems like, you know, you can get stale playing sort of the same style of music, but if you're playing a bunch of different styles and a bunch of different groups, maybe that, you know, fuels the creativity in every single one of those groups.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure. And, it, you know, it cross-pollinates ideas as well. You know, like, I came up really on drum set playing mostly Jamaican and some jazz styles. So, you know, when I play drums with some non-reggae groups, like, you know, I'll do kind of reggae-ish fills, you know, and I think it's cool. I mean, I've never heard a discouraging word about it because I think people think it's, you know, find the juxtaposition cool. I don't think they realize that it's a reggae thing, but it doesn't sound like a rock fill.
Right.
So therefore it sounds different and therefore it's kind of cool, you know? So yeah, there's all kinds of influence being dropped on everybody from everywhere. So.
Now you mentioned doing some work with soul groups and I've noticed the trend over maybe the past, mostly in the past, you know, decade, a lot of soul music mixed with, you know, reggae or rocksteady or, you know, early reggae stuff. And it just seems to blend so well together and they lend so much to each other. Why do you think that is? What makes soul such a good fit with reggae?
Well, I mean, all your Jamaican producers and singers and songwriters were listening to soul back in the 60s and 70s. So, I mean, I think the connection is really just as simple as that. I mean, they were listening to American music and trying to emulate it. Mm-hmm. So it only makes sense that, I mean, you know, how many Curtis Mayfield covers are there from the late 60s, early 70s, you know, Impressions covers, I guess. I mean, you know, the Wailers did it and everybody else. So, but I mean, I guess your question is, you know, or what you're saying is like, you know, why are bands today mixing the two? And I don't really have a strong answer for that, other than like, you know, maybe they stumble across Jamaican music after discovering soul music, and they did the math
on their own and went, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, you know, I really can't speak for it, because to me it's always been kind of a no-brainer, you know,
right?
Like, soul influence and Jamaican music is key.
Yeah,
you know,
I was just thinking this, like, so those Jamaican producers, they're listening to like American R&B and soul. So they're taking the influence from American music and kind of influencing the Jamaican music, and then the Jamaican music goes, you know, all these producers and artists end up going to England and bringing the sound over there, the you know, and then influences, you know, skinhead reggae and two-tone and all this stuff, and then.
Right.
You know, and then it gets brought over to the U.S. And so it's like this whole like circle of like it all comes back to the Midwest or into the to America, and it's like, you know, and it's totally different than the R&B
right.
and the soul that you know, it's like a game of telephone, and it just and the
totally is, yeah,
and the message got lost or something happened.
Well, it keeps, you know, it's like, you know, with it's like when you dub a tape, and every generation gets a little bit more diluted or, you know, fuzzy or something like that. I mean, the soul resurgence in the States in the last 10 years is definitely, I mean, I think it's mostly like home, you know, I think it's mostly homegrown. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's definitely like the Northern soul thing is obviously a British thing, but I feel like in the last at least 5 years, it's been a lot of Americans just basically rediscovering their own lost music that was, you know, never released. You know, a lot of the soul stuff that, you know, ends up on compilations and stuff, you know, it was never released out of the state that it was recorded in. You
right.
know, it never made it past the state borders, because there's only 150 copies of the 7-inch press, and it was sold only locally.
Is
yeah,
the,
I mean,
is
I think
the internet to blame for all this? Are you saying?
I mean, the internet definitely helps disperse information. You know, I mean,
right.
it's unbelievable to me. You know, like, you know, just how. Yeah, like case in point, like just the other a couple of weeks ago, I was looking at some records online and for sale, and you know, it's all these tracks that, like, you know, I'd never heard of, like really weird imprint stuff, Jamaican pressing stuff from the 70s, and it's incredible that I can go to YouTube, type in the name of the song, and sure enough, there is a YouTube clip of some dude playing a 7-inch, the most obscure stuff. You know, they have like, you know, 100 plays and things like that. I mean, these aren't popular tunes by any
right.
means, but the point is that the information is out there if you want to find it. So I don't know. I feel like maybe there's a little bit of a move towards historically appreciating music now than there used to be. Like almost like, you know, not to sound too pretentious, but like, you know, almost like a music ethnomusicologist, where like, you know, you are interested in at least I've met people that are genuinely interested in the history of the music that they're listening to. More so now than I did before. Maybe it's because I'm getting older.
You want to answer a couple of listener questions?
Sure.
A couple of guys here in town, they were saying that they had heard about a couple members of your band getting hit by cars on their bikes. Did you want to touch on that? What exactly happened?
Well, it started in... I don't remember now. I think it must have been 2007. One of our guitarists, Elliot Ross, was hit by a pickup truck. And then, the details are fuzzy now. I think he might have actually been like, the pickup truck drove over part of him.
Oh my God.
While he was biking to work. Then about 4 months, 5 months later, our keyboardist at the time, Otto, was driving on Lakeshore Drive. It must have been in the winter because it was icy, and there's this curve that goes around the John Hancock Building, mm-hmm. right on Lake Michigan there, and I call it, and other people call it, the Dead Man's Curve, because you can't see what's coming around the corner, and it's a really tight turn, and you know you need to slow down to make it, but it's about 4 a.m. and he's driving home southbound, and right as he gets to that corner, another car is coming in his lane at him. Oh. Some drunk dude got on the wrong side of Lakeshore Drive, and they plow into each other head first at about 40 miles an hour. They both walked away from it somehow. But his hands were all messed up. He had like glass embedded in his hands, and I think he might have had a couple breaks in his foot or something like that. But overall, wasn't nearly as completely tragic as it really could have been.
Yeah.
Really could have been. Then, months after that, I was hit by a semi truck on my bike that pinned me up against a row of parked cars and him. And I shattered my elbow in my right hand, and it put me out of drumming commission for about 6 months. And my left arm still doesn't and won't ever really work again. It doesn't bend anymore.
Really?
So that sucks. Luckily there was a good Samaritan that got the license plate number of the truck. And so that's all being handled by various legal entities and whatnot. And then
there's more.
There's at least two more. Yeah. So then literally days after I got hit by a truck, another guy that was playing guitar with us at the time, because Elliot left because his shoulder was all jacked up. This guy that's playing guitar that's Rich, he got doored while he was biking and he broke his shoulder. This was like literally a day after my accident. And then about 3 or 4 months after that, you know, I was up and around again. I was still in casts and the whole thing, but I was at a show and icy again because it's back to winter. And Chris, our bass player, fluke slips on the ice and like literally snaps his, like, where the foot and the ankle meet, like literally snaps that in two just by falling on the ice.
Yeah.
Complete fluke. Had to have like a bar put in it and the whole deal. And I think that about sums it up.
So do we need to get you guys some sort of protective gear, or how can we save you guys from the elements so that you can continue to make the music that you do?
Find the gypsy voodoo person that put this curse on us and have it lifted, because, I mean, yeah, seriously, that was about a year and a half of just straight tragedy after tragedy. So
yeah, I mean, like, that doesn't even get funny after a while. It's like, what?
Yeah.
How is that? How the coincidences there are ridiculous.
It's kind of like a bell curve of laughter. Like, you start out and you're like, that's not funny. And then about 2, 3 in, you're like, all right, that's kind of funny. And then 4 or 5, you're like back down to like,
yeah,
that just sucks. So, so yeah, I mean, we're all doing better now, and knock on wood, haven't had anything of that magnitude slap us in the face. Yet,
well, it sounds like a lot of it is due to the Midwestern winters.
Winters and the fact that we were all bikers, you know, like we all were seriously into bicycling, you know, and as a way of transportation, because Chicago is a bike friendly city. There's places to lock your bike. A lot of streets have bike lanes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was in a bike lane when I got hit by a truck. I mean, it just goes to it doesn't, you know, there's no separation. It's just a painted line.
Right. Yeah. No, but force field there.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it is what it is.
So, yeah, we'll all kind of, you know, send good vibes your way, especially sure. during this winter season here. And hopefully we can keep the drastics out of harm's way, as it were.
That would be great. I mean, like I said, it's been a minute since anything crazy bad happened, so
uh-huh.
we're just gonna keep pushing.
A couple of local musicians here from the group The Prize Fighters. I don't know if you've mm-hmm. heard of them, but they're interested. They wanna see if you are interested in doing some dub mixes of their music. I guess so. This question would be, I guess, for any and all. Are you guys? Are you open for business as far as just putting together mixes, or is this something that you kind of approach them, or how does that work?
No, I have approached people in the past, but No, I'm always down for it. You know, I just did a couple dubs for Green Room Rockers. You know, I just recorded the whole Pinstripes, new Pinstripes album that's still in post mixing, mastering, and all that stuff. But, you know, I plan on doing a dub EP of that album. And, you know, I'm talking with the Fourth Rights right now out of Jersey about doing a, some mixing and some dubs of some of their tracks. You know, I did the Deal's Gone Bad dub EP that came out. So, no, I mean, I love working with different bands, and I love dubbing different groups, you know. I actually love dubbing pretty much any kind of style, you know, the weirder the style, the better. You know, there's, I'm pretty sure it's still on our MySpace page if anybody still visits MySpace, but I did dubs of some tracks that we recorded with that Ralph Soul Jackson guy, and those are straight soul. Prize Fighters, hit me up.
And I believe their guitar player is asking, have you ever dubbed your own fart?
Not yet. That might. I mean, that sounds like some Lee Perry-esque silliness that might make it into a future recording at some point. If I get really low on ideas of crazy sounds, then
yeah, that sounds like a scraping the barrel sort of sort of idea. But
yeah, we can do better than that.
Yeah, you mentioned a bunch of different groups that are you know, fairly new to the scene, but they're up and comers. Have you been paying attention to kind of the American reggae and ska scene? Do you know like any groups you want to point out for our listeners to actively go and seek and check out?
Well, honestly, the two that I just mentioned, and I mean, that might just be the Midwest kind of pride shining through, but,
yeah,
you know, Green Room is great. They're killing it. The last couple times I saw it and, you know, just finished that Pinstripes album. And I mean, I think it sounds really, really good. And, those guys, if they stay on it, I could see breaking the ska glass ceiling, so to speak, and getting some recognition from non-ska specific and centric media outlets and things like that. So I think those you know, those guys are doing some really cool stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I believe the Green Room Rockers and the Pinstripes are they're going to be heading up our way. On a kind of a mini tour, but they'll be in Minneapolis, I believe, January 22nd. We'll give the listeners details on that coming up. And as far as the Drastics, what's in the works for you guys? What's coming up here?
Well, not a lot is playing out right now, as there's a bunch of reasons our tenor player's having a baby. So that's kind of putting things in a different perspective and as far as time commitments and things like that. But, you know, we have the studio, and we all love to record and we all like to write stuff. So I think there most likely will just be an outpouring of studio releases in the next, you know, 4 or 6 months. We have an album pretty much almost tracked, and we're talking with some heavier hitting Jamaican musical royalties, so to speak, about guesting on it, some guest engineers, dub guys from back in the day, as well as singers. So that's kind of an unknown right now is when that's actually going to finally culminate and come together. But we're also working on some tracks to send off to Brian Wallace, the dub robot out in California, to do a dub clash of sorts with him. He's going to send me tracks. I want to send him tracks. We're going to dub each other's and put it out.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, so that should be a lot of fun. I'm really, really looking forward to hunkering down on that. And we put out this free download of some music we recorded at a theater, like a kind of an avant-garde theater event that we did at a space called the Chopin Theater in Chicago. And they're live recordings of all new tunes. And I wrote 6 new tunes for this performance, and they're all extremely I don't know, different for reggae in terms of songwriting style and where the influences are coming from. So probably going to be getting to recording that in the near future too, as a strictly instrumental 6-song kind of freak out, free jazz meets dub reggae kind of thing. So
exciting, man. It sounds like you got a lot of stuff going on. Is it true you've been doing some gigging and touring with Deal's Gone Bad?
For sure, yeah. Yeah, I couldn't make this last tour they just did out to the East Coast because I was already committed to some gigs in Chicago. But yeah, I've been holding on the keys chair with them for about a year and a half now. Year and some change.
Is it enough to become an official Deals Gone Bad member or what?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that they would consider it. At least I consider it. You know, so, I mean, and that's a blast. You know, it's totally different than the Drastics. And at the same time, just a lot of fun. So, and those guys are always killing it, too. So all the new songs that they're pumping out right now, you know, Deals is working on a new album. So I've been over working with Mike, the drummer, at his space, recording organ and Rhodes and stuff like that over there. So the new I think the new tunes sound really great. And I actually look forward to dubbing those as well.
So. Wow. So it sounds like there's a lot to look forward to Drastics-wise and Deals Gone Bad-wise. And I guess everything coming out of Anthony's camp here, it sounds like it's going to be good. Is there any place online you want to throw out some plugs as to how the kids can find your music online?
Oh yeah, for sure. TheDrastics.com. We do at least once a month. We put up a free mixtape for download, and those are always fun. Different styles of music, you know, all only vinyl, and all the tunes are blended together, so it's kind of like a fun little remix in a way. So check that out. There's also, you sign up for our mailing list there and get two free MP3s of some versions and dubs of stuff that aren't on the regular albums. And then, you know, we're on the Facebooks, facebook.com/TheDrastics. Please be our friend. And then on MySpace, if you want to check that out, because the player on MySpace still has a lot of our music on it. That's myspace.com/DrasticDub, because some awful and now defunct, like, glam rock band from Oklahoma that was called The Drastics for like 4 months beat us to that.
Oops.
So, so yeah, but I mean, aside from that, we're on official FM, official.fm, and we're on SoundCloud, and we're on, Bandcamp, and they're all just The Drastics at, you know, drastics.bandcamp.com, soundcloud.com/TheDrastics. So, check it out. All those sites have different music up on them. So a lot of free stuff up there too for download. So check it out.
Very cool. Well, thanks a lot, Anthony, for kind of calling in and being a guest on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Courtney. Thanks for the time, man.
Cool. And as always, I've been your host, Courtney Close, for Anthony and the Drastics. And we're all saying skanka. Lightning train is on its way. I believe I'm gonna get on board right now. Lightning train is on its way. I believe I'm gonna get on board right now. And I've got to tell you, so one day you just might wake up and notice you let go of all the things that matter most. It's hell out here. Change. One love, people treat them all the same. We just dispense with institution. The differences cause immense wars. We built up bridges and broke down fences. The cloud essence of the friends and foes. Freedom chimes on the morning line. Take this trip, don't raise suspicion. All this world's troubles left behind. You ain't got no doubt to make the right decision. Not the dread in a modern time. Here, don't care, just a state of mind. Righteous peace and so divine. If you seek, you too shall find. Lightning train is on its way. I believe I'm gonna get on board right now. Lightning train is on its way. I believe I'm gonna get on board right now. So many people sing it. We're going to a special place, a line without the care. Everyone you love is there, and there ain't no pain, no cross to bear. Lightning train is on its way. I believe I'm gonna get on board right now. Lightning train is on its way. I believe I'm gonna get on.